sun it is not the sun is not heating up the what the sun is doing is heating up the black of the pursuited surfaces of those four blades. Air molecules are bouncing all over inside of that mold. Kind of some of them periodically hit the black surface. The black surface being hot air means that after the air molecules bounce off the black surface, they now have greater velocity because they've been raised in temperature. That's what temperature is, higher velocity. So the air molecules are not being heated by the sunlight because the air molecules are 99.9% transparent to sunlight. The sunlight is heating up the black veins. The air molecules that then touch the black veins come away with greater velocity than the air molecules that touch the silver veins, silver sides of the veins. So that's the mechanism by which the radiometer works. So a solar sail, I think, would have most of its thrust from solar wind, real physical particles being boiled up from the sun. How do you differentiate the solar wind from the solar optical radiation pressure? I don't know. I guess we got to do some more reading. So maybe you've done reading on that, Glenn. And once again, I think you're on the right track, and I'm wondering where your source of information is coming from. Kilo Delta 2, Baker through November Gulf in Freeport, KQIIW in Huntington.
I'm a physicist or electrical engineer, per se. A lot of this is your program for computers. I have some sort of... No, that just comes based on, you know, general scientific knowledge. Longitudinal waves propagate. You need some sort of molecular substance to propagate on a wave, a sound wave. Sound wave is pushing, pressing the air ahead of it and expanding the air behind it. The old, you know, microscopically measurable drop of pressure. But an EM wave, how would it propagate that way in a vacuum? There's nothing to push. It's not like 100 years ago when we theorized about the existence of something called later proven, I think, by the Planck experiment, not the simple exist. But, you know, if you can't propagate a wave that way to the same space, unless it's somehow bending space-time itself, which I don't think it's doing. So just from the nature of longitudinal waves, yes, I have a transverse electrical vector, a transverse magnetic vector. I don't see how I have a lot of based on the simple assumption that there's something out there to propagate that.
Yeah, I agree with you, Rich. Glenn. Out of curiosity, John, KC2WGB, I remember in past weeks you did, a month or two ago, transmit on the 450 version of this machine. I wonder if you have the ability to do that tonight. KC2WGB, K2LIW.
N2XJN.
KC2WGB, copy it. Roger, Dodger, John. Copying loud and clear. Go right ahead.
Okay. I just don't believe the longitudinal wave exists as you guys are describing it. Before we did this, we seem to have a lot of evidence that people develop their own band. If you get into that video, then it's something that's really not congruent at all. But they seem to have a great explanation. Seems like this is well rehearsed, and like you said, they're well intentioned. They're actually not going anywhere. They seem to talk in circles. So it's very difficult to find any scientific background to really be able to do an experiment that can prove it. With all of this, different pancake coils and all different types of windings, I mean, they're driving Western crazy, but I think this is going to be totally fruitful.
WSN2XJN.
N2XJN. WS2N. Go ahead, Paul. K2LAW.
Yeah, NASA had a program on it. It showed, I kind of remember where it is, but they do have a facility somewhere where they have this some kind of a foil or whatever, and there's pressure being put on it, and it's all from light waves. Nothing to do with, you know, atomic particles hitting this at all. And, you know, it's set up for the future of a solar sail. In fact, they want solar sails. The first one that was launched was not successful. The second one was, and that was launched by the Planetary Society. They funded that. I'll have to go to their website. They have a whole thing on that.
Let me ask you this, Paul. If I put a great big chunk of material out there, and I call it a solar sail, and I say that the optical waves bouncing off it is where I'm getting the thrust, and since the sun is continuously boiling off, 400 billion pounds of material, physical material, per second, and all the material streaming out from the sun at roughly a million miles an hour, cold solar wind, and periodically a lot of it hits the North Pole and the South Pole of the Earth and gives you these visual displays. Once I put that sail out there, what I call it a solar sail, how do I differentiate how much of the thrust I'm getting is from solar wind and how much of it is from optical pressure? Has any of the NASA material said that, yeah, we calculated this, and this is only 1%, and the other 99% is this other thing? Have they ever given us that kind of an explanation, Paul? WS2S, K2LIW.
I don't remember where I saw this, but it, you know, it was at one of their facilities, and they have this panel, get what it's made out of, and it's got some kind of minute pressure, barely measurable, and it's in a vacuum, so there's no particles hitting it, and they're just creating some kind of an infinitesimal pressure. I'm going to come back to, this topic goes way back to the early 90s. Carl Sagan wrote a book, Sail Blue Dot, and a couple hundred pages in, he talks about solar sails as a way to eventually go to different star systems. And I was curious about it. It turns out he had a session with AOL, Mouse Online, and you couldn't talk to him, but you could text him, and he would answer you. And I did that. They lined up a bunch of people's questions. My question regarded this topic, and his answer was, my question was, how do you get back? You know, in other words, you go out to the outer planets, how do you get back? And claimed that they're going to be able to use, just like tacking into the wind, they will be able to return that way. And his answer came through the computer screen back in the early 90s. So I guess the thrill of actually asking him a question for his passing in the mid-90s, I think. But that was the topic. It's in one of his books, it's all about solar panels. So as far as proof, I know they have a facility where they're doing it, and they actually have a spacecraft that was launched. Part of Planetary Society, I'll have to look into that thing. I know, WS going time to that.
I could put a solar sail into a vacuum chamber, aim a zillion watts of light at it, and measure an extremely small amount of pressure. However, to really use it, I'm going to deploy it in space. And yes, there is one or two satellites where an experimental solar sail was really deployed in space. In that vacuum chamber, there was no solar wind. There was nothing but the radiation pressure. I accept that. But when you deploy it in space on a real spacecraft, and you got these 400 million pounds per second of solar wind particles boiling off from the sun coming at you at a million miles an hour, striking your solar sail, and you're getting thrust out of that solar sail. And I'm not hearing anybody telling me that, well, in the real space environment, in the real universe, this is how much percentage of the thrust came from solar wind, and this is how much came from optical radiation pressure. I've never heard them separate those two effects. So even though they ran a successful test in the chamber, and maybe the chamber gave them a microgram of thrust, and in real space they got something 50 times bigger than that, you can see where I'm coming from here, because did they really compare the pressure they got from the solar sail on the real satellite in space compared to what they measured in that vacuum chamber? WS2N, KQRW, Red Bull.
Here's another example of how they studied it. No, I don't have any proof, of course, but they did study changing an asteroid's direction. Given enough time, knowing this thing is coming toward Earth, eventually it would change its path. Now, this asteroid being hit equally from the solar wind, equally. I mean, here's this 2-mile diameter asteroid heading toward Earth, and right now it's being hit equally, and it's coming toward us. The only change you're going to put is going to put the shiny Mylar thing on it, and it studies on it, and it's going to change enough where it's not going to hit the Earth, given enough time. So, based on that, I mean, it still has the same solar wind hitting it. The only thing that's changed would be this gigantic Mylar stuff that you're going to put all over the asteroid. Sounds pretty far-fetched, but I mean, they wouldn't have come up with this unless they knew it was theoretically doable there.
I've got a problem with that one, Paul. The basic asteroid has solar wind and solar optical pressure, all of that hitting it. And it's a fairly bumpy but round object. I set up the solar sail, and the solar sail I put on it has an angle to it, very similar to the sail I put up on my sailboat. The sail on my sailboat is being hit by air particles that have a certain velocity. You and I call that wind. And depending on the angle I set at that sail, determines what direction I get the thrust out of it. So real particles of wind striking a real sail on a sailboat allows me to go to the north, to the south, and with tacking I can go east and west. So by the same token, with this asteroid, I want to steer it the similar direction. I put the solar sail across the substantial area of the asteroid. I aim it just right, and now the solar wind particles hitting that solar sail will steer the asteroid in some tangential direction, if you know what I mean. So I'm still worried about the separation of solar wind pressure from optical pressure, and I'm being led to believe that the solar wind pressure could be many times greater, and if they haven't accounted for it, I'm a little bit curious as to what's really going on. WS2N, KQLIW.
And J-N. I read about, said they were going to set up a gigantic mast, boom, and have this thing steerable. They were just going to coat this, if not spray it with Mylar. You know, I mean, every molecule of this thing is not going to change. It's just going to be covered with this shiny substance. You know, no steering capability, whatever, but we're going to put it all on one side to push it out. So, you know, I mean, the only theory there would be that shiny substances, you know, for a hotter impact from photons, electrons, from the cosmic wind, than a dark surface. I mean, then you could say, well, then it's not working. But I'm going to vote that the photons are what's going to be doing it. It will change it. But, I've read a lot of space. You know, lots of different locations of books and magazines. Like everybody else sick, but I'm gonna put my vote on photons. That's why I see different.
Okay, I've got a very interesting Epstein experiment that he did in one of his little puzzles. You've got a chunk of wood sitting on a railroad car, so to speak, and you're shooting bullets into the chunk of wood. The metallic bullets penetrate the chunk of wood, and if you've got very low resistance on the wheels of this railroad car starts moving because because of the momentum you've imparted by way of the metallic bullets penetrating the wood and sticking there. And in the next experiment, you use rubber bullets of the exact same mass and the exact same velocity. The rubber bullets hit the wooden block on the railroad car and bounce off, and bounce back toward you. And you do the experiment first with the metal bullet bullets and then with the rubber bullets. You'll get twice as much thrust out of the rubber bullets, because not only are they going in one direction and they stop in that direction, like the metal bullets did, but then they're reversing their direction. There's twice as much reverse thrust altogether with the rubber bullets. You get a lot more thrust out of the rubber bullets than you do with the metal bullets. By the same token, if I cut the asteroid, put a solar sail up, or coat it with just the right kind of shiny stuff, so that the solar wind particles don't hit and stick like they do in the asteroid, but bounce off, I'll get twice as much thrust on that shiny surface. You see where I'm going with that one, Paul? WS2N, KQLIW.
Thanks, Adrian. Sounds plausible, but the shiny surface is going to reflect these things easier. And that, your bullets haven't changed. The same protons and electrons are still hitting the surface, but what you're changing is you're changing the surface. In the Epstein experiment, you're not changing the wood. You're changing metal bullets to rubber bullets. Change the wood. Change the wood on one side of the, take a big piece of wood, make one piece of wood maybe a hotter surface. And then maybe I'll believe it. Then you hit it with the same, you can't change you can't change what's hitting it. You're hitting it with both photons and with electrons and protons. So, and I'll have to change the bullets. Change the surface there.
Okay, I can do that experiment. I can have a chunk of wood on the railroad car and the metal bullets hit and penetrate and stick. I can then put a sheet of metal over the block of wood, and if it's a hard enough sheet of metal and if the bullets are hard enough, the bullets don't penetrate, they bounce off. So I haven't changed the projectile. I've only changed the surface. When I make that hard metallic surface on in front of a chunk of wood so that now the bullets bounce off, I'll get twice as much thrust out of the back. I haven't changed the projectile. I've only changed the surface. You see where we're going on that one, Paul? WS2N, KQLIW?
Okay, that will work. I agree with that, but the only way we're going to test this, we need a gigantic, and I mean a gigantic spacecraft, with many, many, many miles of surface area. And we're going to have to wait a few years because we're going to have to get this past the heliosphere. Because once you pass that, now you don't have the electrons and protons hitting it. Now you can eliminate the electrons and protons 100%. Thing is beyond that area, beyond the heliosphere, and now the only thing hitting it is light. And fine, you're going to have other protons and electrons from intergalactic space and supernovas that went off. But they believe also, the direction is going to be changed once you get beyond the heliosphere. And if that's true, then my rocket with the photons will go one way and yours is going to go the other. Back to you, Dick.
And that is the amount of solar wind you get falls off with distance. The amount of solar pressure you falls off inverse square law. You double the distance between you and the sun, and the real optical pressure, the real optical watts per square meter, goes down by the inverse square law. By the time you get out there at the heliopause, the amount of solar energy hitting you is so small that you and I could set up a zillion square miles of photocells, and we're not going to get enough energy out of that. That's why you got to have a nuclear power supply out there. So even if you and I had the resources to do that experiment, it would be very difficult to do. Because you go far enough away that you think you've stopped the solar wind. You've also stopped the optical pressure by inverse square law. They both go to zero at maybe the exact same rate. So it's going to be difficult to judge. In order for you and I to do an experiment where we separate on our Great Peak Mylar reflective sail, we separate the solar wind bouncing effect from the real optical pressure photon bouncing effect, I don't know how in the world we separate those two. I guess I could make a surface.
N2XJN
is blackened so that the optical photons hit and stick. I could make that same surface silvery so that the optical photons hit and bounce. That should be a 2-to-1 difference in optical pressure. But if I'm real crafty in the way I synthesize that surface coating material, I could make it so that the solar wind particles always get absorbed. There's enough difference in wavelengths and sizes of particles and whatever, but I could make the solar wind particles always absorbed or always reflected, no change, whereas the photons, I could make them either reflect or get absorbed, and now I think I could measure a difference. It wouldn't be easy, but I think it's possible. WS2N, K2IRW.
N2XJN. Better go to John. I'm going to go back to physics with the wave and mass thing. With the photon, so I'm going to go up to another world. John, over to you.
Well, this is all good, you know, well and good, but we have a problem. A sail works because of its keel, the counterpoint. What is the keel? Is it the inertia? Because what is going to prevent it from rolling or tumbling the asteroid or whatever device you're looking at? We need a keel. Is it the inertia? They're both using.
I think it is the inertia of the asteroid. You got to be very careful in the way you place that solar sail on the asteroid such that it's always operating on the mass center of the asteroid. If you didn't do that, you're just going to end up tumbling the asteroid, and that's going to make life very complicated. Well, tumbling is possible. I mean, if I'm willing to continuously re-steer the solar sail, as the asteroid rotates, it's a little bit similar to what happens with the International Space Station. The International Space Station, I think, always keeps the same surface aimed toward the Earth as it goes around the Earth, and the photovoltaic panels are on a great big pivot, and they pivot in such a way at once per 90 minutes, I guess it's 90 minutes for orbit, once per 90 minutes, they do a complete rotation so that the flat surface of the solar voltaic cells are always aimed toward the sun. So there's ways you could make this thing work with a tumbling asteroid. I think the right way to do it is to position things and aim things in such a way that you're always operating through the mass center of the asteroid. That's my guess is the way Beck and Nadel would set this one up. KC2WGB, K2RIW in the deck there.
N2XJN.
Okay, well, they recognize good citizens. Yeah, that works for me. I think it'd be difficult, but probably could be done. I was wondering about that, but we just I think it's the asteroid. We could repass it into the universe. We have no idea where it's gonna go. Back to you, Lee.
John's vote, before it gets any later. What's your vote, Jim?
So which way do you vote? Is the solar wind the major pressure or is the photon the major pressure? What do you think, John?
I think the solar wind is the major pressure. That's what I believe.
So do I. And where do you fall on that one, Paul?
I'm going to go with the light photon. They talked about it recently with the James Webb. This part of it is set up to compensate for that. So unless they're coming out and saying the wrong thing when they make these statements, they talk about the solar, you know, the light hitting it. I mean, it sounds like a big mistake to make. Back to you, Dick.
Don't forget the neutrinos.
Make sure that none of the solar energy enters there into a telescope. That's what they're worried about. The sun is so darn bright, and they're looking for very dim, far infrared objects. That's the reason why they're locating it at Lagrange point number 2, using the Earth as a shield, using the, between them and the sun, using the 7 layers of mylar as a shield. They're trying to shield everything they can from their Cassegrain telescope to make sure that they can measure those very low light levels that they want to see. So they put up these shields. I'm not convinced they've made it super clear what they're shielding. I think they've got a shield from both solar wind as well as photons, as I see it, Paul. WS2N, KQRW.
N2XJN. Not part of that tennis court part. There's another part that's sticking out by the bottom. You look at it, that piece is, the only reason it's there is for the solar photon hitting it, as the way they, the way I read it. So we'll see.
The bottom. What does it look like, Paul? Describe that to me.
Probably looks like about maybe one-tenth of the size of the whole surface area. So, and it's situated on an angle. You got to see it. I guess it's probably adjustable. But it's a solar sail compensator or whatever. I forget how they put it, but I'll look into it.
Yes, I remember reading about James Webb, and that's done for orientation. By steering those little wings out to the side, toward the sun or away from the sun, they get some kind of pressure, whether it be photon pressure or whether it be solar wind pressure, we're not sure. They get some kind of pressure, and by left side versus right side, they can steer them, and therefore, they can, with free of charge, without using thrusters, they can orient spacecraft. I think those are all, I think those are orientation panels. Go ahead, you, Paul. WS2M, KQRW.
Okay, you read the same article. Okay, it's a matter of what you're reading. To me, I'm reading it as photons hitting it. You're reading it as solar wind. So we'll see. It's still not settled, Dick.
Well, I agree it's not settled. And I'm not saying it's pure solar wind. I think it's both. The only thing I don't know is which is the major one. I think it's both. N2XJN, KQRW, Cleared West.
Yes. Actually, they're doing it in a jump of noise. Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate it very much, sir. John and me, we spent, say, 34 hours trying to prepare the material and to really make something that is of art. I understand that one person's opinion is, especially the leader's opinion, is the opinion that counts. But what about my opinion? Does it count or it doesn't matter? And to exceed.
Yeah, well, the opinion, and we can't be sure we're right yet, John. I mean, West. We can't be sure we're right. I'm not positive. My first impression is that the material that you recommended that we look at last week from Mr. Montauk, and the material you recommend that we look at from this week from Mr. Gallard, I think both of those guys are very wrong. That's an opinion. I can't be sure. I know that you believe that they have valuable material and you want to pursue it further. I can understand that. It is my guess, and it's only a guess, that you've got an uphill battle. That these guys are presenting a fairly radical opinion compared to mainstream science today. They're making claims. Do they really have a working model of something that confirms their claim? Have respected individuals reviewed the working model of their claim? Have they published an article that has been peer-reviewed? Yes, the possibility exists that they've got a stroke of genius that's different than everybody else, and they see something that everybody else has been missing all of these years. It's possible. But my goodness, is that a dark horse. That's a long shot. That's my opinion. So, you're allowed to express your opinion, Wes. And in time, when the smoke settles, we'll eventually find out what's really going on. But right now, I think these guys have got a very uphill battle. They're convincing each other that they're right. And I think it's going to take a little more proof of some kind. N2XJN, K2I. N2XJN, K2I, that's the
code
word.
Okay, N2XJN.
Yeah,
well, actually, I wasn't given chance to even speak by me. So we have a few minutes left. I'll just proceed the next week by means of technical or any other means to give me a little bit more time that would formulate myself. I have visited, actually, I have spoken to Professor Peter Lillemann, Professor Dr. Peter Lillemann, and he stated that longitudinal waves exist. He's seen it, touched it, it's found. And also that Dollard, Eric Dollard, is the, that his word, the genius, and a person who really knows how to do it. One of the things that I have is at least three, four articles, and one is scientific from the physics that is actually confirming the existence of longitudinal waves. The brainwash term is just, that what Dr. Peter told me, is just very much directional vector of orientation. Let me just for a moment. Okay.
Okay.
That means he described brainwash as a form of education that excludes other forms of thinking and forbids others from getting the literature that would eventually lead them to their own conclusion of the wrong thinking. Dr. Peter was with Eric Dollard in that experiment from 60s, and he says that yet there was a lot of pressure that was put on him and on Eric Dollard and plenty of others, including with Eric Dollard cutting off the dead phone line that he was trying to utilize in Mojave Desert. Actually, Eric Dollard was had the prop that was donated to him by one of the people in Mojave Desert, and that property was foreclosed on him. And to exist.
You believe you had conversations with, I think it was Dr. Peter, with reference to longitudinal waves. He has touched them, tasted them, felt them. Did he do it in the far field? What has he done with it? What has he used it to do that confirms that they exist and they're useful? I mean, to say he has touched it, felt it, and tasted it is not quite good enough. What has he really done with it, in your opinion? I mean, he believes, for instance, that longitudinal waves can propagate a signal with no energy loss. Has he transmitted energy across the distance of 1 mile, for instance? I chose 1 mile because the definition of a real radio contact when it comes to these super microwave frequencies by the ARRL, that definition of a radio contact is that it propagates across a real distance. Their exact wording is like a mile or like a kilometer. I mean, to transmit something 1 foot across the desk and call it a radio transmission and reception, they don't accept that. So in the case of these longitudinal waves, has somebody really sent lossless energy across something like a mile into XJFM, HULAW?
There was a number of experiments entering GN, and one of them was in 60s. It was a slope of 3,000 feet tall, about 3,000 feet, I mean, it's 3,000 high and pretty tall on a video. Now, from the information that I've got, was that when you have a transmission with the antenna that is buried in the salt water, and you have been receiving the signal is an energy. But also, the valuable part is about $1 billion of today's money was invested by Macron in 1990 to build a facility that was trying to build a set of antennas. One was directed to Asia, one was directed to Europe, and one to America, South America. And I don't believe the same way that the Peter doesn't believe, and also for the life science, when I spoke to them, they don't believe that somebody would put such a big amount of money just in not having the working model prior to this. Also, what are the notes of my phone? Nobody knows. Another factor is, let me jump, okay, that I'm trying to reach contact with Eric, and I believe I would be lucky to do that and get the straightforward information from him. If you have a Tesla coil, but it's horizontal, just as a high voltage coil, you don't deliver any voltage to it. You use a small, the specific primary coil. And let's say that coil is long, let's say, 10 meters, or 30 feet. You put this coil, and then you put on the end of it another coil. But those coils are not connected to us. It's a transmission of one wire. Basically, I don't have a time right now because the repeater is going to be shut off because of the activity of LIMAR, which I understand and I respect. They want it this way. And I don't have a chance right now to bring you some of the valuable information that will actually face the point of mine. They were trying to use the globe, which is the Earth, not in means of the ground, but in means of the wire. And I just wonder at the end of that, what do you think about $1 billion of today's money invested by Marconi? In 1920, RCA, that was created by the government, basically, built another building on that property to investigate what the heck is he doing. And then all of a sudden, a year later, the facility was shut down by the government. Thank you, actually.
When the government shut them down, what was the motivation? And by the way, the fact that somebody invested a lot of money in something is a piece of evidence, but not necessarily proof. When I visited Edison's Florida laboratory a few years ago, I was shown the fact that he put many millions of his dollars into the research of concrete boats and concrete houses. He believed that his better method of making concrete was going to make very inexpensive boats and very inexpensive houses. And he lost a lot of money on that endeavor because he basically wasn't right. It wasn't economically viable. So the fact that somebody's put a lot of money into something says that, yes, they've got faith in it, but that doesn't prove that they've really done the marketing research and done the modeling and whatever ahead of time. Edison didn't do any modeling. And I don't believe that these guys also did any modeling. They just made a leap of faith. So if this is a real useful concept, the way human beings operate, you can't keep that much bright light under a bushel basket, is the way it's often said in the United States. Somebody is going to do an experiment in his laboratory to confirm that this conspiracy that's trying to stop people from doing this, that it really is valuable, that it really works, and people will secretly be doing it. You can't stop research. You can't unring the bell, if you know what I mean. So the conspiracy theories as to why it doesn't exist are not easy to swallow, as you can tell, Wes. And I think we're about to be cut off. This was TechNet number 1404. And that's K2RIW. Enter XJN, K2RIW.
We're not cut off yet. Thank you very much, Heimer. And, well, the thing is that the Tesla was not really this successful, but Marconi was. And I have no recollection of Marconi building a concrete house at all. This is not a valuable argument to me. And also, I believe that they had a working model. And I would suggest you to examine the video that I sent today, which actually is the video sending of, no, that was before, the video from the Marconi site. And they had a very much precise calculation on the subject. Just the putting over the many miles, the grid that is a copper grid, is something that is extremely expensive. I don't see also the reason why government decided to build RCA buildings next to it in 1919 if there was no need for it. And then eventually the question is why everything was shut down. If there is an error of someone who didn't do the proper calculation, why didn't the government shut down there? Now, talking about the conspiracy theory, I'm not really supporting any conspiracy theory, but I don't want to hear the arguments that are really not reliable. I can hear theories and I can accept theories, but talking about the concrete houses is kind of ironic and very clear.
The Edison Laboratory, not Marconi, Edison Laboratory in Florida. He had a laboratory in Edison, New Jersey, what's now called Edison, New Jersey. And he also had one in Florida on the West Coast. I'm having trouble remembering the name of the town right now. But I visited that laboratory a couple of years ago. Edison did a whole lot of experiments in various things, and one of them was concrete houses and concrete boats. But hundreds of millions of dollars of his personal fortune into that, and it wasn't successful. So the fact that people have put a lot of money into something that didn't turn out successful, those kind of scenarios have happened a few times. That's all I'm saying. And so the fact that it didn't turn out successful doesn't necessarily mean that it got cut off by a government, a conspiracy, or whatever. So my repeat question is, has, to your knowledge, someone sent energy losslessly across miles of distance with a longitudinal wave? Have they done it? And when they did it, they do it only once? I mean, if I could transmit electrical energy from my town to your town, and if I put in 100 watts of energy, 100 watt seconds of energy in my town, and you get 98 watt seconds of energy in your town, my goodness, would that be a substantial experiment? You and I would repeat it every single day in front of everybody that would be interested in seeing it, and we wouldn't stop demonstrating it. No one could stop us. I don't think anyone could stop us from demonstrating it.
That'd be Fort Myers.
Yeah, I think it's Fort Myers, Florida. Sounds right. Thank you, Lou. So, has anyone done that kind of a demonstration? To your knowledge, Wes, N2XJM, K2LIW.
N2XJM. Okay, well, first, we have to specify something. Longitudinal wave of Tesla should be described how it looks like. It looks like ET square wave pulse train, where the pulse repetition rate is 1 million equals per second, let's say. The duty cycle is 10%, and the 90% off. And the voltage in each impulse is, let's say, 50,000 volts. DC or more. Then, this is what Tesla wants the circuit to do. That is where he wants to create the discharge of his capacitor stage on the circuit. But, there is a number of materials. The physics forum I have in here somewhere. Hold on. It says, also I have a scientific paper from 1985, magnetic shock compression in laboratory plasma, which was actually based on a study of quasars and radio galaxies that I can send to you. Also, I have the Eric Dollard and Thomas Brown a paper talking about transport multifactor and the relation to it. I don't think that we have a time to do it. But for the simple things that you should understand, let me just... You might not agree with it, but you at least should understand that a regular terminology that was delivered to electromagnetic waves is a terminology that not necessarily matches the terminology of longitudinal waves. Basically, what Marconi was trying to do is transmit energy over the single wire. Whether that was longitudinal wave or not longitudinal wave, he was treating Earth as the conductor. I have an article on this, but some of the things that are very much important. What is the capacitance in this new theory? The phenomenon of the capacitance is the type of the electrical energy storage in the form of the field in an enclosed space. This space is typically bounded by two parallel metallic plates or two metallic foils on an intervening insulator or dielectric and nearly infinite variety of more complex structures can exhibit capacity as long as the difference in the electric potential exists between various areas of the structure. The oscillating coil represents one possibility as to a capacitor or more complex form. And I'm going to try to describe it to you. Let me jump. The capacitance is a little bit differently explained. The perception of the capacitance as used today is wholly different to the proper understanding of this effect by the people who agree with it. Siemens mentioned that this introductory book electric discharges waves and impulses, and I'm trying to quote that, unfortunately, to a large extent in dealing with the dielectric fields, the prehistoric conception of the electrostatic charge, electron, and conductor still exists, and by its use destroys the analogy between two components of the electrical fields, the electromagnetic and the dielectric, and makes that consideration of the electric fields unnecessarily complicated. Basically, Siemens said that no more sense in thinking of the capacitive current as the current which charges the conductor with a quantity of electricity than there is in of speaking of the inductance voltage as charging the conductor with a quantity of magnetism. But the later conception together with the notion of the quantity of magnetism has vanished since Faraday's representation of the magnetic field by lines of force. Let me just... Basically, shortly, if you have two conductors, and those two conductors are networked parallel next to each other, the closer you put them, the more more of interaction do you have. You have electric lines, they're actually trying to push them one next to the other, but you have the magnetic fluxes that are trying to repel them the other. So basically, he's trying to understand the longitudinal wave as the compression or tension wave, or say the wave that has some kind of... Unbelievable. Okay. So, basically, since you have these two conductors, one next to the other, you're creating kind of pipe that keeps them together. When you look at the lines of magnetic lines around the conductor, that actually constitutes the pressure. So, from other things, frequency is the dimensional, the dimensional where the inductance and the capacitance are locked in the geometrical proportion. I'm trying to have the most sense of it that I can. Father light of force theory, maybe that explains something.
Welcome to the W2L repeater.
This
morning, 9:12:20 a.m. Next tonight at 8:30, this is the W2L amateur radio repeat system. Next tonight at 8:30, W2L repeater system. Next tonight at 8:30, welcome to the W2L repeater. Next tonight at 8:30, this is the W2L amateur radio repeater system. Good morning, the time is 5 a.m. Next tonight at 8:30, W2L repeater system. Next tonight at 8:30, welcome to the W2L repeater system.